Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Ambassadors of Hope. I'm your host, Charles Bender. We're so excited that you've tuned in to hear from local South Florida leaders who are making a difference in our community and region through our charity, Place of Hope. Who are we? We're the largest, most diverse children and families organization spanning Palm Beach County and the entire Treasure Coast. Our goal is to help those we serve find healing and restoration, leading to a brighter future. Since 2001, Place of Hope has served over 25,000 children and youth in South Florida. Place of Hope is a faith-based, state-licensed organization providing programs and services to children, youth, and families to end cycles of abuse, neglect, homelessness, and human trafficking in our local communities. None of this would be possible without our Ambassadors of Hope, the people in this community and throughout South Florida who use their leadership, influence, time, talent, and resources to help others. Many have inspiring stories of their own that tie them intrinsically to our mission, and we hope that their stories will challenge you to get out and make a difference where you live, work, and play. So much can grow from even just one small seed of hope. Thank you for becoming a part of our community, helping us grow, and becoming an ambassador of hope yourself. Please be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single uplifting moment. For further details and information on how you can connect with us, please go to placeofhope.com/podcast. That's placeofhope.com/podcast. And we'd love to hear from you anytime. Please email us at pohpodcast@placeofhope.com or find us on social media. Ambassadors of Hope, placing hope in a child's future. Welcome to Ambassadors of Hope. We are excited today to have our good friends Scott and Catherine Moss, as well as Alan Brown. As you know, we like to highlight great people in our community that are doing big things for Place of Hope. This trio of good friends has been doing things for many years now. I'm just going to jump right into it. Give a little intro about yourselves, you know, background about yourselves and about why you're involved in Place of Hope and what you're doing. Scott, you can start us off.
Thank you. Great to be here. Great to be with Alan. And of course, Kate Moss. We'll start off there. I work for Kate and the family to make sure that she's happy at all times, which is pretty easy to do. She's a great lady, and run a business with my family and wonderful people that we work with, Moss and Associates, which we're a general contractor, construction manager, and we also do utility scale solar. We do this business in South Florida, Tampa, Dallas, and Hawaii as far as the vertical buildings are concerned. As far as utility scale solar, we do it from Florida to Nevada to Virginia, if you can kind of think about that triangle. We have roughly 4,000 employees.
Oh, so just a small little business.
Small family business, about 19 years. It started with me, my dad, and a computer, and my brother joined about a year later. And we have some awesome people that make up the team.
Including
Alan. He was a team member this summer.
Yep, we're going to hear about that for sure. Kate, what about you?
All right, my name is Catherine Moss, and I'm a stay-at-home mom. I've got three kids, and two of which are in college now, and one is a senior in high school. And I found Place of Hope just at the right time when I had teenagers, and they were not too happy with me. So I had to go out into the community and find some kids that would appreciate me and I could, you know, have some fun with and make some change with. So I have embraced Place of Hope and found such a passion, such a loving community being involved here. Just, I'm so grateful and so happy to be part of it.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure all teenagers, we all feel that way about our teenagers at some point. So,
yes. Yeah, it's always better out there. Oh, sorry.
Alan, no, I'm what about you, guys. Buddy? Tell us about you.
Alan Brown. So much to tell. How much time we have? No, I'm just a young man who was down on his luck, and I found the amazing people at Place of Hope. And from there, it was a drive to get better and create a better outlook on life. And once I was able to do that in Place of Hope, they let me, you know, find the amazing people at Moss. And oh man, I'm getting choked up because I just love the environment that I'm in. You know, it just feels so creative and loved. So
that's awesome, man.
Yeah. So I'm here just to keep pushing that out there and hopefully get more young people in there and, you know, just create a great area for everyone, you know, just want to make communities again.
And I have to correct you. You are not just a man. You are the man.
The man.
Okay.
He's got a and great I'm not smile just a mom. Yeah.
I put that away a long time ago. Lisa taught me to take my little box of gifts off the shelf and use them. So you can't be just a man. You got to be the man.
Oh, be the man. All
right. Okay.
We could literally just stop the show right now and think about it and like roll back and look at the, even what you just said, which was not rehearsed or anything, that, you know, the family, the community, how you came to Place Hope, met the love, and then you met the love of the Moss family, and that's how they run their company. And it's like, it just shows how this is just such a perfect mixing of the corporate and the philanthropic and the charity world and the people helping business. And I mean, your story is just amazing. You know, we hold you in very high regard.
Thank you.
You're going to go big place. So tell us originally how you came to find Place Hope and how it's had an impact in your life. We'll start with you, Kate. How about that?
Okay, well, I received an invitation from Renee Fader. I had worked with Renee and David at St. Paul Lutheran School. Our kids grew up together. We have a Moss Foundation golf tournament down at Trump. David Fader was the GM there. Alan, you've been down there, right? Yeah, the
place is amazing. I took pictures of the trash cans. That's how it is.
Every year at the foundation, we give out checks to our favorite charities that have to do with children, education, and veterans. As we're giving out the checks, there is one raffle that we do that's a $5,000 check to a charity of your choice. Well, lo and behold, David, of all people, was the winning raffle. So he called his wife, Renee, and he said, what charity would you like to give the $5,000 to? And she said, of course, Place of Hope. So I didn't know anything about this because at the time I wasn't at the tournament. But Renee called me out of the blue and she said, hey, I want to invite you to this luncheon. You'll probably know a lot of the ladies there. It's for an organization called Place of Hope. And I had never heard of it. And I came and a young man spoke. I was very moved by his story. He's a young man that was, you know, walking the streets with his little brother in East Boca, eating out of the Louis Bossy trash can at night, making sure that his brother got to school on time. And then he got to school after that and he would pick him up and, you know, he's basically raising his brother on the streets. And I can't remember about the mom or the dad, but I was, you know, taken with tears, of course. And then I started to look around the room and I realized there were a lot of women and men leaders in the room that I had met through serving as junior league and the PTA and the church. And I thought, wow, I know these people in this room. And if these are the people that are supporting this organization, these are the movers and shakers that I've always looked up to in doing volunteer work. So I was intrigued by what I saw, and I wanted to find out more about the organization. And so I, you know, after the luncheon, I ended up doing a tour at Place of Hope. And I was just, I met Lisa. I cried on her couch. I told her my whole story. I was a mess. But I just, the presence, the faith, just something came over me that just was unbelievable. And I just wanted to be a part of it.
Thank you for that. That's awesome. Scott, what about you? Kate brought you in.
Oh, there you go. Right, that's the short end of the story right there. Yeah, my 5'3" blonde in my kitchen told me this is what we're going to do. And I said, yes, ma'am. And that's how we got involved. When she told me the people, you know, it's all of, you know, that old saying, you're the average sum of the people that you hang out with. Right. Mm-hmm. And when you hear about the people that are involved with this, you're like, oh, okay. You don't have to do much vetting. They've already done the vetting for you. Right. And so I'm a big trust person and, you know, a lot can be done with a strong base of trust. And so when these people trust that the organization is going to first take care of the most vulnerable people that are out there and then also be good stewards of people's treasures. Right. And those two combination drives this incredible amount of trust that you see at Place of Hope. And so that's what Kate saw. And then she said, "You're going to do this." And I said, "Yes, ma'am."
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's one of the primary points of this whole show, Ambassadors of Hope, because that's what you're talking about. The ambassadors that are out there that make Place of Hope what it is. And a lot of people, they look and say, "Oh, you know, it's Charles, Lisa, and Maya, because we're on the actual paid team." But no. What Place of Hope is God's sovereign hand. And then all these people who are awakened to the mission and get involved and make it even possible to do what we do. And you guys went from that day or that time, which was not even that long ago, just a few years, right? And mm-hmm. and look at, I mean, now you guys are doing pretty much everything with us. Everything we do, you guys have a hand in. So can't thank you enough. All right, my friend, what about you? What about you, Alan Brown? Tell us a little bit about how you came to us and so forth.
You know, I was in a very dark place in my life. I was living out of my car. Didn't know if I even want to continue anything, really. You know, I was just searching for something, you know. So I was at FAU, Bloodline University, for people who don't know. And it was like a little town hall meeting that they have. And I wanted to know more about what they would be doing for mental health, because that's one aspect of my life that I think that if I didn't have therapy, I would have been a totally different person than I am today. You know, the man I am today, 5 years ago, was not the same person at all. I attribute that to the little bit amount of therapy I had. So I wanted to ask them, like, you know, are we going to have more therapists and what are we doing for that? And one of the presidents was actually in the board. I didn't even know. She pulled me aside and she was talking to me and I was letting her know, yeah, I'm living out of my car, but I still want to do something. And she pointed me to some people called Vista Nova out there in West Palm. And that was a little further out than what I could, you know, drive all day and come back to FAU. And they were like, "I think we have someone." They were like, "Do you by chance know Place of Hope?" I was like, "I've never heard of them. Can you get me in touch?" So they got me in touch. And like literally that same day, I was called by Miss Teresa, Miss Finley, Miss Terry Finley. They called me, did a meeting with me, and they heard my story. And they were like, "Yeah, we want to get you here. We want to get you here. We want to get you some help." And they delivered. They delivered. The first moment of that light that I was looking for, they were there. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I met some amazing people like Miss Rebecca, Miss Lisa. And it just kept having me going like, "Yeah, I got to keep going. Mm-hmm. There's no reason to stop now." And then Miss Rebecca's like, "Hey, you say you're an engineer. You know, there's a company out there called Moss. See if you want to do a little internship with them." You know, I did my first internship out of 4 years of college. Didn't know anything about the company yet. Didn't know the people. So I'm going in a little scared, a little frightful of what's going to happen, but hopeful at the same time, you know. And the type of love that I received just to get into the building, it made me happy to the point to where if I had to wake up at 4 o'clock to work, I'd wake up at 2, ready to go for the whole day. And I'll do it out. I'll do it again the next week, next day. I didn't care because it was that great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good deal, buddy. That's awesome. Scott, talk about a little bit, from what I understand, of your journey as starting as a laborer at some point in your construction career to becoming the CEO of Moss. Obviously, it's an inspiring story. And share a little bit about the leadership, about that, but also about the leadership qualities and the values that you bring to the company that have contributed to the overall success of Moss.
No, that's a good story.
Really good.
Thank you for the feedback. We strive for exactly that, is people feel super welcomed. And it's a hard job, right? You wake up at 6:30 in the morning, and if someone's willing to wake up that hard and work for that long, that's the whole point of the business, right? So thank you for the feedback. I was 17 and I made the mistake of being caught on a couch. And my dad walked up and said, "You will be at the Miami airport at 6:30 tomorrow. Make sure you have boots on and a t-shirt and some jeans, and they'll give you a hard hat." And I said, "Oh, okay." And so I worked as a laborer on the Miami Terminal A. If you walk through the Terminal A, Miami, I helped build the infrastructure, the structure of the building. And I was part of the concrete crew. And so it was a good lesson about doing some extremely hard labor. It taught me I really wanted to go back to school and actually learn so I could manage and being out there all day. That's a tough job. That's a tough job. And so the business, I worked my way through another company, Centex, as a project manager. And Bob left there in 2003, and I left maybe 3 or 4 weeks after he left.
That's Bob Moss we're talking about.
Yeah, Bob Moss and my dad. And he had a great career, which helped catapult Moss. And so we started the business 20 years ago. The qualities, you know, the values we actually didn't come up with until 13 years later. Part of my journey was I had to figure out why I was going to be away from the family and my wife and also what was this all about? Cause it couldn't be just about money. Right. And so, we went on a quest, January 2016 to figure out what's our values that is going to be, no matter if we're in the construction business or in selling some sort of widgets, what values are going to be all about Moss and what's our core purpose? Our core purpose is, empowered to create the exceptional. And so that means every person in their position is empowered to create the exceptional for the client, for each other, for a trade contractor, for a community. And so with that, people are set free to use their talents to make the best of it, if you will. Mm-hmm. And they can do it with these three values. First, honor relationships, care about the safety, well-being, and success of our families and business partners. And that word well-being is super important because it's just not, you know, clearly we have to keep everyone safe. It's a moral obligation in the business we're in, right? But well-being means not just if you just showed up to work, but how are you arriving as a whole person, right? And that whole person isn't just, are you okay? Are you set up to be successful, right? What studies have shown over the time period is well-being ends up driving a much more engaged workforce and team. And so if you really focus on well-being as a company, and by the way, this study only came out like 3 months ago, then you're going to have a much better success of having an engaged team, which is pretty cool. So the next one is entrepreneur spirit, embrace opportunity, overcome challenges and innovate. And so that drives our team to kind of think outside the box. We know you have your values right when someone tries to or someone overdoes it. Right. And so entrepreneurial spirit, people think out of the box a lot. And so that's what they'll blame it on. Sometimes you're like, well, okay, you're over the guardrails, but I know, understand entrepreneurial spirit. You got to get it back in the guardrails. So that's kind of fun. And then the last one is an ode to my father because he just has so much energy. It's called contagious energy. And that contagious energy is what he felt when he walked in that office the first day. And that's, you're going to work hard because that's his business, right? This business is a business where someone's opening the gate at 6:30 in the morning and the gate may never close, right? Like at F1, the gate never closed for 3 months, right? When we were finishing up that project. Number two is you can be nice in this business. I know it's not known for being a nice industry. You can be nice. And we kind of demand people to be nice to not only one another, but to the client, to the trade contractors, to each other, right? And lastly, you can have fun, 1! Right? Not 3-1. That means, you know, we got to keep it to where it's fun that everyone can have. It's not, and everyone's version of fun is a little different. So you have to kind of be okay with the variation of fun.
We want to give a special thanks and shout out to our presenting sponsor, Crypto Capital Venture. Crypto Capital Venture acts as both a startup recruiting firm as well as one of the largest crypto communities in the cryptocurrency space, offering trailblazing content for over 5 years. If you're interested in crypto, you can join over 300,000 subscribers on their YouTube channel for the latest on crypto. Just go to YouTube and search Crypto Capital Venture and make sure to subscribe. Thanks so much, Dan, and our friends at Crypto Capital Venture. So when you were talking to your story earlier, how you got started, I mean, I asked the question, but then when you said it, I didn't actually know the answer. And our stories are similar. Like when I got started, my dad was in the elevator industry and he ended up owning his own small company, but prior he worked for a big company and I went to work for them and they did the same thing with me. You know, first, like, I think they called me Greenie and then they put me to work stacking rails in elevators and counterweights and man, 18. I mean, it was good workout, but boy, did I not like it all that much. And it made me go back to school. The same exact thing. Yeah. I'm like, I got to go back to school and saw a couple of these guys that were only like 35 years old and they looked like they were 90. You know, 100%. They had been working so hard. So anyway, it just made me laugh inside. But tell us a little bit about, and you can all kind of give in some input here because I know what you were just working on solar and so forth, but just some of the cool projects. You mentioned one because you know I'm a big Formula One fan, but tell us some of the cool projects you guys have done over the years or might be even doing now.
There's roughly 120 projects going on across the system at one time. So when people say, hey, what do you have going on? I'm like, well, let me, how long do you have? So hopefully I have plenty of battery in that camera and also the audio. So I think one of the neatest ones is Formula One, which has been done in two phases. We built the track and half the garage 1 year and then finished the suites and the kind of everything above the garage this past year. And it's been a fantastic success for the area. What people don't realize about F1, in essence, that creates a Super Bowl, actually times two every year in South Florida, which is pretty fascinating.
Oh yeah.
Another great project that we're set to finish over this next year or so is we're building a St. Regis in Sarasota, which it'll be the first kind of five-star that's in Sarasota. There's a Ritz there, but it's not going to hold a candle to this. The kind of give you an idea how opulent it's going to be. It's going to have 25,000 square feet of pools and lazy rivers and stingray petting zoos. That's awesome. It's going to be pretty cool. That's a really cool project. You know, and when you think about solar, you know, some people think about solar on top of a warehouse or they're thinking about just maybe a small field, but think about 5,000 acres. And we built something similar to that in Colorado, right outside or right south of Colorado Springs. And so there's a lot of great projects that we do that have huge meaning in each one of the communities we work in. So Marlins Ballpark is probably one of my favorite ones that we had a hand in. That
how do you stay on the forefront as a company to be able to go from, I mean, all you have to do really is go around Broward and here and you'll see Moss signs, right? And but most of what you see is the vertical construction, the commercial or some residential. But how do you pivot into the kinds of things you just described? Like somebody just calls and says you want to build an F1 track?
I mean, yeah. Yeah. So that I'm going to go back to the values, that entrepreneurial spirit, right? Embrace opportunities, right? And so some people ask, are you guys going to continue to grow? And I said, well, let's go back to the values and it'll tell you what's going to happen, right? In order to not grow, we'd have to unembrace opportunities, right? So that's not who we are. That F1 story is a great story because it is a story of a long, and so that honor relationships always still comes into this because Bob and Stephen Ross, who owns the Miami Dolphins, is where the track is. They had known each other for 25 years, and so Stephen had a bad experience with a contractor as they put on the roof of the stadium, and he called and said, "I need your help," and Bob said, "Okay, this is a good call," and so we did the tennis center first there. So we did the whole outdoor court facility, the big kind of big pond they have out front there or water feature. And then we did all of the infrastructure and set up the temporary tennis center that's inside the stadium the first time for them. And so that's how we ended up doing the F1. Now this is how this works, right? So that's the first job. The second job is the training facility for the Dolphins. We finished it a couple of years ago, which by the way, I'm a big Dolphins fan. So,
oh God, thank you.
That was a huge honor.
I love you so much. Right? You know we're going to beat the Bulls.
Fins up. Yeah,
right? You know, it's all the training facility.
Oh yeah, no.
That was 100%.
I mean, they get paid to train. They work on Sundays.
Yeah, yeah.
They
yeah.
get paid to train.
There you go. You're right about that. I think you're right. And then of course we're finishing up, we finished his office building, Related's office building in West Palm Beach, mm-hmm. and we're doing another job for him. So you see how the honor relationship and also the entrepreneurial spirit
Trust.
Yeah. And what ends up happening is if you have an engaged workforce, then at the end of the day, that's what those clients feel. And so then they get honored by getting their work done on time. And also they get to use those facilities and monetize those facilities as they need to.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
American story. I love it. I like the entrepreneurial part too, of course.
I'm Scott Moss. I am Catherine Moss's husband. That's my title. I'm also the CEO of Moss Construction. We're a construction management business and also a utilities solar contractor. The business started 20 years ago with me, my dad, and a computer. My brother joined a year later, and we've hired some of the best people that work in construction. Our goal is to make this the most rewarding place to work in construction. We feel like it's a moral obligation to also be a part of the community that we end up building physical assets into. And what we also do is if someone's qualified and they have the desire to be in the construction field, we give an opportunity to an internship. And I think we had two or three placeable kids come through here and they've done a great job. We aren't so interested in being recognized. We more interested in doing the right thing and what are we proud of. When you're recognized by an esteemed organization like Place of Hope, that you're making a difference in the community, it's an honor. And then it's also good for our team members here to understand that we're giving back in the communities they live in. Future's bright with Place of Hope and with Moss. Looking forward to making a difference in children's lives for the ongoing future. We all want our dollars spent wisely. We feel like the dollars that are given back or the contributions that are given back to Place of Hope are used wisely. And if you're considering a place to give back, to make a social impact, this is a great organization to do that.
One of the other things you guys do really well is you have a great internship program. So maybe mention something about that, but then we want to hear about your latest internship. So tell us why you guys do that.
So the one constraint on the business is if you get the opportunities, right, as you embrace opportunities, have to have the resources, right? And they have to be the right culture in order to kind of understand that the well-being and engaged workforce kind of drives everything. And so you have to create these leaders yourself over time. And then sometimes there'll be leaders outside that will get it and they'll come searching for this. But every year we have about 150 to 175 interns from about 20 different schools. So we go out to schools, we interview people, and then we bring them into the family for, you know, if you think about this from, and I'll talk about this selfishly, it's a 3-month interview, right? We get to see how people behave. We get to see how they handle stress. We get to see how they handle life balances, right? And life demands. I am not a big fan of this work-life balance thing because
we're a lot of life.
Work is part of life, right? I you can't have a life without work, right? I mean, that's kind of how this works.
That is the balance,
right? Yeah, and this life balance, like you're going to have demands in your personal life, in your family life, and your work life. You're going to have all those demands. Now you got to figure out some way how to. Sometimes it feels survive through them, and then sometimes it's thrive through them. And so that's how we view that work-life balance, quote unquote. And so that internship provides us with that really. And what we do is we stagger it. So we'll have freshmen, sophomore, juniors, and seniors. So at all times, so you'll have some team members that'll come in with a full years of experience because they have 3-month internships, kind of stacked up. And then at that point, they get it. And they're immediately productive. What we also do with this is it's super organized. So Alan will tell you he had responsibility. He wasn't just getting coffee and being treated like an intern. He's given responsibility. He's given pressure. He's given things that he needs to do for the team. And the team relies on him to get it done. We're super intentional about making sure it's going to be an experience they get value from because we owe that to them as well. Then what we also do is we bring all of them together. He happened to be in Mississippi. We had people in Texas and Arizona and all other places. We can bring them all to South Florida and we have a project engineers summit. And so that's some of the young engineers. So some of the young engineers they would work with as they go full time, they get together and they have a learning. They get a little company overview and then they have a leadership learning moment. And then they go into often different areas. So if he was into solar, he would go into the mechanical area and learn all about mechanical installations and what he needs to look for as an engineer. And so we do that for a couple of different reasons. We build this camaraderie. So if he has a question, he can call somebody else, another project. Right. And so now it builds this kind of intimacy with the organization.
Sure.
And then we give them technical training on top of it. Right. So that's the thought process.
I love it. Now, I know you've on your own explained, like, you've experienced the Moss culture. You've experienced the love. You've experienced the having the responsibility, all those things kind of coming together. How was it? Did you enjoy this last round? And I know you're back. You're doing, first of all, hang on, let me back up. You're at FIU doing engineering, mechanical engineering. I tell you what, that's impressive itself because
it's hard.
I couldn't carry your folders for you in that world. So tell us a little bit about your internship at Moss.
So my last internship at Moss, it was, well, because I haven't been out of Florida since I've been alive for the 24 years of my life. It was a huge experience trying to understand the area I was in. Thankfully, I had people who were like adamant about, hey, do you need this? Do you need help here? One person who was like that, Ms. Constance Hayes. Constance Hayes, she's the administrator for the site. She knew everyone and everyone knew her. If there was something that was wrong, she would be the first person I would contact, and she'd be like, yeah, I got you. I know what you need. You did this wrong, but it's fine. Do it over here. You'll be way better. And because of that type of camaraderie that I got from them, I gave them everything I got, you know? So when they were like, hey, can you set up these meetings? Can you talk with the owners? Can you make sure that because they had me tracking the equipment. Mm-hmm. You know how easy it is to lose your money as soon as your equipment goes in. And you had this pile driver here for I don't know how many days and you don't even need it anymore. Yeah, I was the guy to be like, hey, your pile driver been there for a couple months now. We don't need it. We want to move it away. And so, you know, even though I was up for the challenge, it was a lot, but I loved it. Yeah. I loved every second of it. And when there was a period where I didn't have it under, like, I didn't know what to do, Sam would come in or Francesco would come in and he'd be like, hey, what's wrong, man? I can see it on your face. What's good? What you need?
You know, what's really interesting about your answer right now, your description is that you actually, everything you just talked about, you spoke in a circular fashion about the core values of the company without even maybe realizing you were doing it. You didn't talk about the technical stuff you were doing. You talked about the core values of the company, which, I mean, I think that's what you would want. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they got to learn the job and so forth in the long run. I'm sure you hope to work for the company when you're all done and so forth. But hopefully. And some things you'll learn as you go, but you could potentially go in knowing all that stuff already. Right. That's awesome. I love it. Yeah. It's working.
But another thing he worked on, which I checked with the team about you, so I got an update.
see,
he worked on the plan of the day.
Three-month interview, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. 3-month interview. He worked on the plan of the day, which I think is one of the coolest things that we do in that team. So we meet with the owner, who is very involved in these projects, and we talk about what do we plan on getting done today? What play are we running? So they know what play we're running, and in that way, they can understand what we're doing. We do things totally different than most companies. Most companies have one person that knows kind of everything as a generalist. And what he saw was, and we were talking before this, is you have these mini crews come in and they're specialists. And so they're like little ninjas in their particular field of area. So they're super efficient. They know exactly what needs to get done. They don't need a lot of supervision. His job is to make sure he keeps in front of them and then was able to tell, hey, this is what these group of ninjas are doing over there. So watch them. Right. And then this group is doing this and this group is doing this. And it's pretty, pretty cool to watch. And so it's a big responsibility.
You know? I love it.
And if I could add on to that, one other thing I was doing along with planning the day was like the monthly report.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
The monthly report. You would think it's simple until you start trying to add all the information and now budgeting gets involved and you're trying to make sure everyone can see exactly what all the lines and items that was paid for. Like if I bought tape was on there, we had made sure everything was itemized. And then another thing that I loved about it was safety. You know, they have, you know, documents of everything and it breaks down the task that's being had. And then on the back it's blank. And I asked one of my safety advisors and I was like, hey, what's this blank part about? they're like, oh, that's a living, this is a living, breathing document. So if something happens on that field that is out of the task area of hazards and stuff like that, we want you to document it so we can put it in our head and be like, okay, we saw snakes that day. Make sure these guys get their snake girders. Make sure they're protected out there. Things like that made it really happy for me to be there because it's just like, that's a level of protection over someone who might not think of that.
Excellent.
Especially in Mississippi, they didn't know anything. They don't know anything about energy, right? We're just talking straight farmers.
Yeah.
So when we're trying to break everything down, when we're like, hey, you do this, 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 watch out for this and watch out for these sinkholes over here. Yeah. They're like, oh, yep. Just see it now. Thank you. Thank you. And then they're, then because they're farmers, they're like, hey, don't forget, you got some type of bug in here that you need to look for. Right. I've never heard of it. What's it called? It's like a very tough little spider like beetle.
Oh, no.
And it's like if you touch it, like it's real fast and you can't just stomp at it. You got to get away from it. It's a very dangerous. Anyways, what I'm saying is we were prepared for it, and the things that we weren't prepared for, we made notes of. And cool. That's what I loved about the whole experience.
Cool. You know what my experience would have been in that? I would have been halfway through, and as soon as they said snakes, I'd have been packing up and going home. I'd have been done with it.
Well, I had a lot of guys from Texas. They're like, nah, you go away from a steak. I'm going to come right to you with it.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Welcome to this segment entitled Seed of Hope, where even the smallest seed has the potential to flourish into something extraordinary. This month, our kids enjoyed a valuable opportunity to engage with PBSO during Career Day at our Kids Sanctuary campus. It was a positive and impactful experience, particularly for some of our girls who previously held negative perceptions of the police due to associations with family separation. This community initiative played a crucial role in reshaping those perceptions, fostering a newfound appreciation for the police as dedicated individuals committed to serving and protecting our community. Thank you for listening to this week's segment on Seed of Hope, and please continue listening on for the rest of this week's episode.
So you don't have to look very far or dig very deep to see also the give back side of Moss, the philanthropic nature, the taking care of the communities that you guys do business in. I know that's a big part, but I want to jump into Kate.
Okay.
And I want you to talk about your experience on the big run, which included Moss in a big way.
Yeah.
But you know, you were the queen bee of taking a project on and making one of our cottages down at the Leanna David Rinker campus so special. And talk about what drove you to even think about doing that, and then take us through a little bit of the process of how that went and how rewarding that was and so forth. Because okay. We know you blessed a bunch of lives through it, but how was that for you?
It was extremely rewarding. And I have to say that the reason why I love Place of Hope is because I've learned from my corporate friend that I have at my house that purpose and passion drives everything that you do. And you have to have purpose and passion.
Absolutely.
And all of the values and cultural, you know, all of the morals and values and the ways we go about our business at work at Moss, it's the same thing that's happening at Place of Hope. I mean, we have decorating ninjas, we have food ninjas, we have, you know, basket ninjas, we have all kinds of ninjas that are working special teams at all times. And we are, if you're an angel mom or a volunteer, whether you're raising money or you're decorating a house or you're, you know, filling envelopes for thank you notes, you are organically able to do whatever it is that you feel is a need for this organization. And so it's, you know, contagious energy with entrepreneurship. And if we have an idea, I mean, just today, we were working on the Hope Bash, and we went to an architect's office, and we were looking at an entryway in which we're going to go into the Hope Bash and raise money. But we were talking about other ideas that we have on the table that are creative. And, you know, we just come up with these ideas and then we pass it through leadership and they say, roll with it, do it. Like, this is awesome. I didn't think of it. So I love that part about Place of Hope because I am a master's degree stay-at-home mom and I have ideas like a lot of the other volunteers, and I need to feel like I'm producing and, you know, make, you know, doing something that's making a difference. And so that for me fulfills that void that I have. So I feel like just as much as Moss puts into the culture of their people, Place of Hope has done that for me. They've made me a public speaker, which I, you know, put my feet in the sand. I never want to do it, but it's made me grow in ways that are amazing.
You're good at it, by the way.
Oh, you're so sweet.
That's true.
And so my big thing is when I get involved in something, I'm usually 110%. So I came in, I wanted to meet the organization. I wanted to see what was happening. I wanted to meet the kids. I wanted to work with my hands. So I first came to Place of Hope and realized, well, a lot of these kids don't have clothes for church or interviews or whatever, or they're wearing the wrong size, or, you know, maybe they've never worn the right size shoe. They don't even know what size shoe they are. It was really sad. Or they were in the fields and their foot didn't grow the way that the 18-year-old foot should be. So I first talked to Charles and Lisa and I said, you know, we need to get these kids some clothes. And I'm, you know, I said, you know, I know families that have clothes and I like to do design. And if you could just find a room for me, I'll put together a consignment shop and then I'll get the volunteers in and we can style the kids. We can make them feel confident. And so Lisa just walked me to this little room and there were some basketballs and some boxes and it was really not being used for much. It was just empty space. And I just showed up with a truck one day and they let me paint and, you know, put things on the walls and bring curtains. And I mean, I had a ball just having fun decorating this closet. So we called it Hope Threads and, we had special paper bucks, kind of like Monopoly money. And the kids at Place of Hope would come with their Monopoly money that they got from doing good things on campus, going to the enrichment classes, showing up for therapy, helping another out, you know, working in the pantry, meeting the guy that came from Whole Foods to take the extra baked goods out of the truck and fill the pantry. So the kids at Place of Hope felt like they were contributing. Then they came to my shop. I felt like I was contributing. They were being built up. And you got, you know, you always have these fundraising events where the kids speak and they didn't have anything to wear. So they would come in and we would dress them all up. And, you know, we had a great time. So that's where I started. And that's where I started to build the relationship with the kids. And I loved it. And then I was there a lot because when you get donations, you have to go through the donations and, you know, I mean, and everybody was benefiting because even the cleaning staff at Place of Hope, we would save the best for the kids. And then we would, again, either send them up north to the other consignment shop or we would give them to the cleaning staff that was there. So we were using everything, which was another thing. Place of Hope uses all the resources all the time. If a table's on the side of the road, they will use it. I mean, the handyman will put cribs together and go to Home Depot and buy extra wood to patch it together. We use everything, which I don't like waste, no waste in my house. So that spoke to me. And so I could see that they were good stewards of their money, their time. I trusted them. So I also like design. So I was on campus working in the store and they asked me to come over to the cottage and see if I could help move around the furniture to make it more efficient in the girls' cottage, the mom and baby's cottage. And I started to look around and I thought, oh, we can do this. We move this around. But then, you know, it's a kid's cottage and there were lots of kids that came through there. And I honestly don't know when it was built, but it needed a fresh coat of paint. And the dishwasher, even though they had a dishwasher, they had two refrigerators. It was really nice, but the dishwasher wasn't working. And, you know, when you have babies and bottles, you don't have much time. So I started to look around and I thought, I have a drywall guy and I could call a painter and maybe I could, you know, take out this banquet and move this table and make it more efficient. So I just asked Lisa and Charles if I could get in here and just kind of fix it up a little.
And it begins.
Yeah, that's exactly.
I've heard this story before.
So I
think, was no simple paint up.
I no, think
I've
was,
seen this story before. That way. I've seen this story before at home renovations. Yes.
So I love it.
I came home and I said, just listen, sit, just listen to my idea. Just sit. Here's a glass of wine. And I said, I need Brett Atkinson. And I don't know if you know Brett Atkinson. He's one of my favorites.
I met him.
He's so sweet.
He's an amazing person.
He's the president of Vertical Construction. Mm-hmm. And I said,
South Florida. Yeah.
Can I have Brett Atkinson to get me a couple of guys to help me coordinate some of these subcontractors? Oh, the eyes started rolling. And he said, just tell me what you want. Just tell me what you want me to do and I will do it. So we started a team and all of a sudden I was getting Moss emails and I felt like a big wig, right? So I showed up and they organically, entrepreneurially left me alone and let me figure all this out. We had cabinets donated. We got discounts at Lowe's. We had drywall donated. Paint donated, the community came together and it was amazing. And I spent long hours there, early mornings, late nights. I saw the beautiful sunset over the lake. I saw the kids rocking in their rocking chairs on the porch. I realized that sometimes the outside of the cottage was more important than the inside of the cottage. I helped them with their groceries. They fed my puppy. They walked my puppy. I was allowed to bring a puppy in the house on my job site. I mean, it was just beautiful. And I had so much fun. And then I had passion and purpose. And what you don't know about me is that I live, you know, a fabulous lifestyle now. But when I was growing up, I had a really tough childhood. You know, I lived in a great neighborhood with great parents that were pillars of the community during the day. And at night, my house got very violent and doors started swinging off the hinges and plates got thrown at the windows. And I couldn't really say anything about it because my dad was the president of the Kiwanis Club or the bank manager, he was involved in everything, but it was a really bad, emotional, verbally, physical life. And, I thank God for Place of Hope because when I was 15 and I got tired of being knocked around, I got very bold and brave and I had called the police in my house off of Las Olas Boulevard so many times that the police told me they can't come anymore. And they gave me a card to the child, you know, net or whatever, the Department of Children. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know what that was. And I knew that if I called those people on that card, that my dad would lose his job downtown at the big bank with the big window. And then my mom would be on the street. I would be on the street. My sister would be on the street. So I suffered in silence. But I had a lot of fire inside and it just made me mad and angry. And I tell Lisa and Charles all the time, this is my testimony. Had I known that Place of Hope was available off of Boca Rio Road, I would have taken a cab and I would have gone there and I would have showed up with my backpack because I went to St. Thomas Aquinas High School, which is a nice high school. A lot of people know it because of the football. And I would take a cab as a 15-year-old and I would go to my other nice neighborhood in Rio Vista, Fort Lauderdale, and I would sleep on the floor with no furniture in my house until my house was sold. And there were cockroaches there too, because, you know, when you move out, then there's no food. So I was living in a house in a nice neighborhood, 15 minutes, 10 minutes away from my other house. My mom was so distraught over my dad. She didn't even realize I was gone. And I would walk in my uniform to my neighbor's house, and we didn't talk about it. I just got in her car. She drove me to school. She never asked me. She knew what was going on. So me going through this, when I am at Place of Hope, people might think I'm a woman of society or I've got a nice car or whatever. It doesn't matter. I am in your shoes. I know who you are. I have been on alert since I was 4 years old. I can read a room in 2 minutes, and I know who's got my back, and I know who I can trust, and I know who I can love. And when people upset me, sometimes I have to put up big boundaries because I'm a hurt person and I can't be touched too much. Like, you can't mess with me too much. So I get these children and I love you. I love these children. And you know, what's so beautiful is that y'all all open up to me right away, because I almost think you kind of feel like I get you. You know, so anyways, through that construction project, I scrubbed on my hands and knees, swear to God, and I prayed in that place and I scrubbed the grout, and I was just, I'm going on and on, but I really truly washed sin. I washed anger. I washed so many things away when I rebuilt that house. So I wasn't just rebuilding that house for y'all. I was rebuilding it for me. And to this day, honestly, I have a great relationship with my father. He never apologized. Surprise, surprise. But I'm not surprised, because I had enough confidence and I looked him in the eye and I said, Dad, I forgive you. I know you didn't know how to be a good dad or to love, but I know you love me and I know I am loved. So that, in a nutshell, long story short story long, I don't know. That is why I'm involved. And that's why I have purpose and passion for y'all. And I just love you. That's it.
Love you too. Ms. Kat, I love you too. There's, I love you guys. There's true love there. And you know, I understand.
I got you. So you're not just a man, just a guy. I'm not just a mom. I'm not just a person. And I'm not going to beep, beep on the thing, but I pretty much am a dang old good girl. And I work hard. So that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
There's not a dry eye in this room right now. Thank you for that. You know, the Bible says, refers to that there's power in the testimony. That's what we just experienced right here. It's like the Holy Spirit just come over this place. Your testimony is powerful. And that will help lead people to redemption. That'll help lift people to new highs. Oh, you just heard it. And you don't know this part, but there was a very peaceful bunny rabbit right out the window, right sitting right next to you. As you were talking, he felt safe enough to come over here and just hang out and maybe try to listen. So
yeah, he might actually jump in your car when they come out. They're like, you know what? I know Miss Catherine's here. I feel her.
Aww.
I'll be around.
It's hard for me to public speak. And of course, every time I do, and I expose myself, I feel worried that people are going to feel sorry for me or think different of me. But I know that when I'm in an uncomfortable space and I just speak from my heart, that God is putting me in that spot because He wants me to go outside of the comfort zone to share. Because really, if you look at me from the outside, you don't think these things. And I think a lot of the angel moms, like from what I've learned, and we go on retreats so we can trust each other and, you know, build a better leadership team. I think a lot of these women and men that help serve, I think they all have a story. And I think that's what makes Place of Hope so special, is because we care so much and we want everything to work out for everybody. So we're all exactly like-minded in that we want to do better things to make life happier, you know? So
we are so blessed by the team that we have at Place of Hope, the ambassadorship, the people that are involved, the young people that get to come be with us and be a part of. By the way, I found out today nobody's called you yet. We're forming right now a leadership council, a youth leadership council at Place of Hope. Now, Scott, you're serving on our CEO council for Place of Hope. We're going to have a youth leadership council. So we're going to make sure Joy calls you about that, because we want you on that as well. You know, we have these kids that come back years later and they're say, well, wow, I didn't have a gym when I lived here. I didn't have an enrichment center when I lived here, and I didn't have this. So we wanted to get their input and so forth. But, you know, it's interesting, because when you and I first sat down, when we started talking, there's a lot of different kinds of ambassadors for the mission of Place of Hope and what we do in the lives we together do in the lives of young people and families, and trying to keep more families from breaking up with the kids ending up in the system and so forth. And that's what we're doing when we're building this housing and so forth. But there's all these kinds of ambassadors, and we talked about Moss and the company, but then we just got to hear you say what drives you, which I know is partially what drives you, and which also lifts you and encourages us and keeps us wanting to go. But I can tell you, after all these years, that is probably the biggest blessing for me in my role, is the people that are involved with us and that team and the why behind it. And that is the most exhilarating part of everything we get to do. I was going to just dump this last question just because I don't even want to talk about anything else now, but it's important, because part of what we're talking about here for Ambassadors of Hope is, from a business and a leadership perspective, you know, people want to know why things remain great as well. I think you just heard a big reason why Place of Hope has survived and thrived, and we continue to do more, is because, you know, God's got his hand on us, but all the great people and the why behind what drives them to be a part of Place of Hope, regardless of what they do and their role. But how does Moss stay on the forefront, the cutting edge of things? And as you grow, how do you keep those principles and those core values? It's tough, because, you know, like, as we've grown at Place of Hope, and staff will make fun that I hate when there's fingerprints on doors, right? Well, that gets a little bit harder when you went from one building to owning 45 buildings, right? So, yeah. But you still have to have those standards. It's not always perfect, but you got to try. How do you guys go about that? Because now you're in multiple places too. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, you have to dedicate a decent amount of time to just think. And I feel some businesses make the mistake of, they get busy, so busy with their head down and doing, they get kind of lost in the forest, and they don't even realize in the forest, because they're looking at just trees, right? So we spend, as a vision leadership team, that's the top 10 people of the business. We spend 6 to 7 hours together in a meeting once a month, and it's offsite. And then we really talk about, first, how do you make this a great place to work? Because we feel like those values really make sure that we're going to be in perpetuity, right? We want to make sure we thrive in perpetuity. And so if we think about how to make a great place to work along those values, and then this is the business challenges we have, right? The way we look at it is, the values are in the middle. And this is Louise, who's one of my mentors. She's a great lady. She taught me this. She's values in the middle. Then you go mission, what's your mission you're on. Then you go strategy. This is how you're going to get it done. This is how you think you're going to get done. And you have to go structure. And then this is the structure you need to get it done. So yes, if you want to have 45 buildings, you have to have a structure to get it done, right? If that's your strategy at 45, you have to have a structure. Then you infill with people. A lot of companies just start hiring people and they're not quite sure what they're going to do, right? And so then no one knows what play they're going to run. They don't know what position they're going to have. So if you start with this kind of strategy, structure, people, and it has to, we iterate this all the time. It probably twice a year we iterate it. The business has grown. So I'll give you kind of idea on scale. Like in 2011, we were doing about $175 million in sale and work a year. maybe we had 142 people in the business, right? And now, you know, 12 years later, we'll do 3.2 billion this year. So when you kind of think about 30 times, how do you iterate that fast? And so that's the only way you do it. You have to do thinking time to figure out what do you want, and then how do you make sure you have the strategy and structure to make sure that that's going to happen. And so it takes a lot of time. That particular VLT, are saying is, if you want to go fast, you go alone. If you want to go far, you go together, right? And so going together takes a lot more time. And you're feeling it as a CEO of a growing business or a growing organization. And I love the fact that I call it a business and not an organization, right?
You guys
think about this as this, and a business thrives for perpetuity because, you know, the game of business is not a finite game. There's a beginning of the business. There's no end. Well, end is bad, right? So once you think infinite, it's a whole different game, right? You're setting this thing up for much longer than myself and much longer for you, Charles. So that's kind of fun. It's a fun puzzle to kind of think about. I think that's the way it lasts is you, it's not for how much money can we raise this year? That's not the point. How can we make this sustainable for the children and the most vulnerable people, that we're taking care of here? Yeah. That really is the point. To a certain degree, we're doing the work that that needs to be done that government necessarily can't do or is not super efficient at doing.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. It's our responsibility to hand this off one day when we're all gone in the afterlife and make sure that it's strong. And you'll do some version of that same exact thing with the company.
Moms, 100%. You know? Yeah.
That's exactly why we felt so important to do this capital campaign and the endowment and all this so that the buildings are paid for and that we're feeding the individuals long after we're gone. And that's what life is all about. You know, if you have a great life, it is your responsibility to help others in need. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter if you have $10 and you give two of the 10, it doesn't matter how much, but that you are doing that. And that's going to live on past us. And that will be so unique. And that's why we have to gather the people that we know that care about these things as much as we do to keep going and gather them up and say, let's take this on as an army and let's get this done. You know, we don't have much time, right?
Well, that's what I think of. Like, is there a better way to spend our days than to do what you just described? And it doesn't matter what you do day to day for work. You should live with intentionality and purpose and meaning. And I know everybody in this room does. And so I'm grateful for that for sure. Well, listen, thank you guys. This has been this has been my favorite one that we've done so far. Can I say that? You might have to cut that out. Anyway, but it has been.
Don't cut it.
But we appreciate you guys. We appreciate everything that you all do to just do what you just described. I don't even have to say anything. I mean, you understand the mission here, and you guys, particularly you two right here, you do a little bit of everything. And we probably even drive you nuts with how many things we ask. Well, but you know, in leadership, that's the thing. If you're really good at something, people are going to keep asking you to do stuff. But you never really say no. So a lot more to come. And thank you guys for everything that you're sowing into. And Alan, we know you're going big places, baby. So you just keep going in the direction you're going. And we're super proud of you. And we are, we're one grateful group of people. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey, I'll be bringing more people along with me.
That sounds like recruiting. Hey, we need.
It's not just going to be me. It's going to be a lot of people around me, and I'm going to make it the forefront of my mind to make sure that not only do I succeed, but the people I bring with me as well.
It's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's good.
Help lift others. I love it. Thank you for listening. Please be sure to subscribe and share with your friends so you don't even miss a thing. And if you really gained value today, please be sure to give us a 5-star review so, of course, we can be put in front of more listeners. For details and show notes about today's podcast and how you can connect with and support our guests, please go to placeofhope.com/podcast. And please don't forget to email us at pohpodcast@placeofhope.com. And for sure, follow us on social media. Ambassadors of Hope, placing hope in a child's future.